Welcome back to another episode of the Kyle Anzalone Show. And I have a just jam-packed full episode of things that I think are highly important to talk about today. Are we on the brink of war with Iran? But most importantly, Donald Trump. Who can stop the president? Who is next, Iran or Greenland? Response to ICE shooting and Dan Bongino versus Dave Smith. Former guest of this show, Dave Smith, going up with the former deputy director of the FBI, and very revealing exchange between those two that I wanted to take a minute to talk about. So, starting off here with President Donald Trump, I remember, and it's over a decade ago now, Donald Trump descends from the golden escalators, and almost immediately, the liberal class of the United States of America freaks out. And very quickly, there's claims that this man's a Nazi, that he's a dictator. And I always found those claims to be completely hyperbolic and absurd. Through Trump's first administration, they try to, claim, oh, this guy wants to cozy up to dictators because he wanted to resolve the conflict on the Korean Peninsula, or he wanted to have better relations with the other major nuclear superpower in the world. These weren't ads of somebody who wanted to get along with dictators. It was simply a man who wanted to improve America's standing on the global stage. And then when you looked at his domestic policy, a lot of it was stifled. And ultimately, he allowed the deep state to hijack his presidency through Russiagate and then the COVID pandemic and really destroy any chance he had of re-election. And so this time around, though, President Trump in his second administration is very different. He is ramming through policies that in his first administration would have been held up by courts or people within the administration just lying to him, as they did when he ordered U.S. troops out of Syria, and they just deceived him. They made it seem like there wasn't as many troops there as they was, that the U.S. was drawing down, that there was Americans exiting. And they did this so they could get to the end of his administration, and then Biden would leave them there. Now we have a situation where Trump seems completely unbound and really moving towards this authoritarian position that for years didn't seem to reflect his actual position. So I want to play this clip of Donald Trump that I think really cements how he looks at himself and the amount of power that he has.
Do you see any checks on your power on the world stage? Is there anything that could stop you if you wanted to?
Yeah, there's one thing. My own morality, my own mind. It's the only thing that can stop.
And, not international law.
And that's
law.
Very good. I don't need international law.
So it's amazing to me there that these journalists don't say, not even the Constitution, that document that you swore an oath to less than a year ago when you assumed the office of President of the United States of America, that Donald Trump would now run roughshod over the Constitution. And, on this show, we've really hammered home how he's done that on foreign policy, but he's also done that on a lot of domestic issues as well. Look at his handling and his now dispute with the Fed chairman, Jerome Powell. Right? Donald Trump seems completely unrestrained at this point, and we should all be alarmed. He's surrounded himself with a bunch of either fools or people desperate for power themselves, or in Rubio's case, a combination of the both. And so he doesn't have anybody who would actually stop him. They're all yes men who don't care or understand the Constitution either. And so when Donald Trump just says, oh, I want to do this, his administration is moving forward with it, and it's putting the American people in a really bad position, and it's setting a very, very dangerous precedent moving forward in the United States. And look, it's not like there have been, over the past few decades in particular, a lot of checks on executive power. If you think about how the Bush administration handled things after 9/11, but they did get authorization for use of military force for Iraq and Afghanistan. It's not as if those two wars led any congressional approval at all. Congress did fund those conflicts. And so, there was some respect paid towards the rule of law still, even if they were doing things that completely shredded the Bill of Rights and led to a lot of executive overreach, excuse me. And so we need to realize that we are in a very, very dangerous moment here with Donald Trump. And that gets me into where I'm going next, which is the possibility for more wars. With previous presidents, you would assume if we're going to war in Iran, it's going to take an Iraq war level style of propaganda, a year long effort or more, where daily you have top administration officials going on the news and saying, oh, we now have intelligence that the Iranian leader did this. He allowed Al-Qaeda to do that. He did this bad thing to his own people. But I think the kidnapping of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro was probably, should have been the warning sign to us that Donald Trump isn't going to bother going to Congress. He's not even going to bother propagandizing the American people and trying to convince them that going to war in one of these countries would actually be a good idea. Donald Trump is going to do what he wants. And unfortunately, what he wants is absolutely insane. And it's going to cost the American people a lot of blood and treasure. It's going to cause a lot of destruction and chaos around the world. And we are looking at a very dangerous 3 years coming up. And maybe producer Chris could throw up his countdown of how much longer we have to hold our breath until Donald Trump is out of office. Now, I do want to get into the Iran stuff, because I do think we are maybe on the brink, maybe within a few days or a few hours, of the United States launching another round of strikes on Iran. So let's play the president talking about the protests in Iran.
Way to all Iranian patriots, keep protesting, take over your institutions if possible, and save the name of the killers and the abusers that are abusing you. You're being very badly abused. If the numbers are right now, I hear five different sets of numbers. I hear numbers. Look, one death is too much. But I hear much lower numbers, and then I hear much higher numbers. But I say save their names, because they'll pay a very big price. And I've canceled all meetings with the Iranian officials until the senseless killing of protesters stops. And all I say to them is help is on its way. You saw that I put tariffs on anybody doing business with Iran. Just went into effect today. And I say, make Iran great again. You know, it was a great country until these monsters came in and took it over.
So, I mean, so much insanity, lies to break down there. But really, just to start with the big point is, what is happening in Iran? At the end of last year, I think December 28th is kind of the day that people recognize small protests breaking out in Iran. And very quickly after that happened, Donald Trump said, if any Iranian protesters are killed, the U.S. is going to intervene. And Donald Trump was also meeting with Benjamin Netanyahu at this time. And we've gotten reports, even from just absolute Israeli mouthpieces in the media, including Axios's Barak Ravid, who said that Mossad is helping to fuel the protests going on in Iran. And so whether these protests are, you know, mostly organic and somewhat orchestrated by foreign powers, the U.S. and Israel, or were really just small protests that were completely fueled by the outside, these protests now are not only major, but are oftentimes devolving into riots. Now, the Iranian security forces have certainly responded with violence, and now a lot of video coming out of Iran. A lot of it is hard to verify, but there are reports of that violence being directed at, you know, people who we would identify in the United States as peaceful protesters, not people trying to set cars on fire, conduct arson at mosques and things like this, which are going on. There's also been attacks on Iranian arms depots. And so there is a mix here of what is happening going on in Iran between genuine protests and people who are upset with, I think, mainly the economic issues in Iran right now is the big deal. Water and economics are the bigger thing than the religious control. Although I'm sure whenever you have a lot of people out in the streets protesting the government, people who have issues for related issues are also going to go out to the streets and try to become a part of the movement and try to become a part of that energy, but also hopefully shift that energy in their direction or have them included within the wider protest movement and their demands. Now, I did find it interesting that early on in these protests, the Iranian government was saying, "We understand why people are out protesting. The economic conditions are hard. We're willing to meet with the protest leaderships." This was statements made by both the country's president and the Ayatollah himself. Now, as time has gone on and you know, there's been more rioting and killing. Donald Trump says he's hearing five different figures and numbers in that clips. I think he's being sincere there. There's a lot of different figures, people saying 12,000, 2,000, 500. The 500, there was a number over the weekend at 200, and that was 160 protesters and 41 security forces. That seemed realistic. Now, three more days have gone by, so if that is up to 500, that seems absolutely possible too, but these 12,000 number just seems probably straight propaganda. And by the way, that came from a source that Mossad is feeding information to. So that could very easily just be Israeli propaganda trying to fuel the protesters and get Donald Trump to act and attack Iran. But back to the, you know, wider point here is as these protests have grown, Donald Trump has continued to try to fuel them from Washington, from the Oval Office. He's posted things on Truth Social. I think this was on Tuesday that he wrote that the protesters need to keep going and that help is on the way. And it's not just Trump's rhetoric. There's a lot of reporting coming out both in Israeli and U.S. media that the U.S. is looking at a range of options for dealing with Iran. I haven't read any reports that Trump has decided on one of these options, but the options included using Starlink to restore internet to the protesters because Tehran has cut the internet. They included sanctions, which they already implemented, cyber attacks on the Iranian government, I guess, to try to make the government unable to respond to the riots going on in Iran, and then also actually kinetic strikes. And this was in the Times of Israel, I believe. They actually went and said that the strikes the White House are considering aren't even strikes on the IRGC, the Iranian military, but on non-military targets in Tehran. So that would certainly suggest that the U.S. is looking at carrying out a decapitation strike in Iran. So that's the rhetoric. We also have, in reporting, we also have a lot of reporting around the logistical end of what would need to happen if the U.S. was going to attack Iran. The U.S. would need to have a massive amount of air power in the region, naval power in the region, aircraft carrier strike groups. They also have a lot of bases in the region that would be really vulnerable to an Iranian counterattack. And so what the U.S. needs to do is they have little outposts all over the Middle East. They all need to move into the bigger bases where there's going to be more extensive air defenses. I'm sure aircraft are moved around. Some of them probably moved out of the Middle East, particularly away from the Al Udeid Air Base in Qatar. And we're just preparing because we know if we attack Iran, Iran is going to send more missiles back at the U.S. than we could possibly intercept, and it's going to put a lot of our troops in harm's way. So they're going to do everything they can to prevent this. We're hearing Europeans evacuating their Middle East embassies. I just saw the U.K. shut down its embassy in Tehran. They've temporarily closed it. And so there are a lot of different signs that we are getting very, very close to striking Iran. And again, I wouldn't be surprised if it happened in the coming hour or days. I don't want to sound alarmist. However, I think what we've seen through the first year of the Trump administration is we need to be alarmist because the president is impulsive, he's reckless, and he's completely unrestrained, particularly when it comes to foreign policy. And so if he wants to strike Iran, Marco Rubio isn't going to stop him. Pete Hegseth isn't going to invoke the Constitution. Pam Bondi isn't going to question if this is illegal or not. Stephen Miller is encouraging it. And J.D. Vance is a complete coward. Tulsi Gabbard nowhere to be seen. And so there's nobody who is going to stop Donald Trump from doing this. He is going, if he wants to, if he orders it, he is going to do it. I think the only thing that could possibly stop it would be like a mass movement of the MAGA base to really stand up against this. Although before the 12-day war in June, which the U.S. eventually joined and hit Iran, Charlie Kirk, who I think is kind of core to the MAGA youth, right? Like that was his movement that he was huge to electing Donald Trump, right? Like they are really important to Trump's base. And Kirk was against it and Trump did it anyways. Now, maybe he would have done more without Kirk's opposition. I don't know, but certainly I think there's little reason to think that there's even popular opposition that would stop Trump at this point. As the first clip we said today, the only thing that would change Trump's mind is his own mind if he decided that this was no longer a good thing. Now, right before we went on, I did see Donald Trump said this afternoon that he believed the killing of Iranian protesters was stopped. And so maybe he decided to find himself an off-ramp here. It's possible that the Israelis weren't ready for it. I saw reports this afternoon from Israeli officials explaining that they are waiting on official word from the United States if an attack is going to happen, but they still seem to be moving a lot of their military assets around. I would imagine if the U.S. strikes Iran, Israel is probably going to get involved in that conflict, either just be by Iranian retaliation against Israel and then Israel responding to that, or Israel's direct participation in the attack. Either way, Israel has helped to foment the conditions in Iran and in the Middle East for this attack to happen. So just one last note here on that last point I made. It's always important to remember that what is actually happening and what we're getting in public could all be a very elaborate ruse in order to disguise when this attack is going to come. You know, maybe they want everybody to think the attack is coming this week so they see what Iranian preparations are like. Or it's also possible that they are, doing this because Iran's going to think, oh, this means an attack isn't coming, and then they'll attack then. So a lot of possibilities here. Do want to now move into Greenland. So let's play Trump talking about Greenland.
If we don't take Greenland, Russia or China will take Greenland, and I am not going to let that happen.
Can offer you either like,
yeah, sure, I'd love to buy, make a deal with them, it's easier. But one way or the other, we're gonna have Greenland.
So I did just see a bunch of you commenters are mentioning that there's flights being moved in around Iranian airspace, which certainly would be a signal that an attack is coming. So it's possible that it is going to be unfolding kind of as this show is going on. There's really no way for me to update to it and respond to it now. With Greenland, this is, again, something that Trump talked about in his first administration, made no effort to move towards it whatsoever. But now I think it's possible that he is looking at finding some way to take Greenland. I don't think we're looking at American military action in short order, especially not if we're attacking Iran, if we're embroiled in Latin America. We have our commitments to Ukraine and also Europe and then East Asia. So that would seem to really, really be stretching it to think that we are going to conduct some kind of military operation to take Greenland. It's a vast, vast territory. So I imagine even if there's not a lot of fighting or I imagine none probably, just the simple amount of military presence the U.S. would need to have around the territory to claim it would have to be very large. Now, the next part of this is if the U.S. does move to take Greenland, it probably will destroy NATO, which is maybe the only good thing that could come of Greenland becoming a part of the United States of America, would be that the alliance would then crumble. Denmark, which Greenland is currently a colony of Denmark, would say that our sovereign territory was taken from us. NATO needs to respond, but NATO can't do anything because NATO's the United States of America. Now, on that point, one of Donald Trump's main arguments for the reason we need to take over Greenland is because Russia and China will take over Greenland with it just being a colony of Denmark. But Denmark is a member of NATO, and Donald Trump says the U.S. supports NATO and that we remain committed to NATO. So if NATO will prevent, if the United States will prevent a Russian or Chinese invasion of Greenland, which I'm not really sure is a threat anyways, but let's just say that it is, that is already established under the current security framework that exists. And so I think that really reveals the main cause isn't the threat from Russia or China. It's that Donald Trump, I think, wants to be able to say that he expanded the United States of America, that he was the first president to do it in a very long time. And now going forward and into the future, there's going to be, look, you know, because of the way our maps are drawn, Greenland looks much more vast than it actually is. But in every map, in every school building, there is going to be a huge chunk of map now colored the same as the rest of the United States of America. And the story of that is going to be taught to every kid about how President Donald Trump expanded the United States. All right. Next up, I want to update a story that we touched on and broke down a little bit last week. This is the killing of Renee Nicole Good in Minnesota by an ICE officer. And I heard this response from Donald Trump on it, and I just think it fits very well into the whole authoritarian subject that we're talking about today with Donald Trump. So let's play this clip.
Highly disrespectful of law enforcement. The woman and her friend were highly disrespectful of law enforcement. You saw that. They were harassing them. They were following for days and for hours. And I think, frankly, they're professional agitators.
But just disrespect.
And I'd like to find out, and we are going to find out who's paying for it.
But just disrespect.
With their brand new signs and all the different things. But these are professional agitators, and law enforcement should not be in a position where they have to put up with this stuff. What that woman and what her friend and what their other friends were doing to law enforcement, not just ICE, law enforcement is outrageous.
So everything that Donald Trump said there indicates that this was a murder, right? At no point does he say that you could be an agitator, you could be a protester. That's what you could be in the United States of America. His idea that she was disrespectful to the police and that how is somehow an offense worthy of capital punishment is something that doesn't exist in this country. In fact, Donald Trump is threatening to bomb Iran for the exact same reason. So this, of course, is just utterly absurd, but it goes to show, I think, Trump's mindset on all of this, which is everything's about him. And that cop was in Minnesota enforcing his immigration policy. And that woman disrespected the police officer. And from Donald Trump's view, she disrespected him. And so her life is valueless now. And if she was murdered by that police officer, then Donald Trump doesn't care. He's going to justify it. And he will make sure that that police officer, that ICE officer, doesn't face any repercussions from their action. Now, it's very interesting, right? Like, Donald Trump doesn't say she hit him with his car or she hit him with her car, which would have been the justification to shoot her. She's disrespectful. She was disrupting. She was a professional disruptor. She was following them around, which I don't think any of these claims are true anyways. But even if they were all true, the ICE officer is still guilty of murder by the accounting that Donald Trump gives of this. And again, I think this really goes to his authoritarian mindset and the idea that by challenging Donald Trump's policies, you are insulting himself personally, and running you know your life is then meaningless. You know, I've never seen anything as wild as Donald Trump making literally everything that happens in this country about himself. Scott Adams recently passed away, and Donald Trump posted some remarks about him on his Truth Social. And the second sentence is, Scott Adams was a supporter of me, right? Like, immediately, you know, anybody's value has to do with how much they support the president of the United States. And you see it in every single remark that he makes. So before I wrap up here, former guest of the show, you might have heard of him other places, but he was on this show before. Dave Smith, you know, was very critical of Dan Bongino during his time as deputy. That there's some Middle Eastern intelligence connected to Jeffrey Epstein. And, people have made the point, I think Dave Smith did, after Bongino announced he was leaving the FBI, that, hey, this guy's going to have a lot to account for, because he made all these promises during his time as a podcaster, and now he's coming back to that space. And the reason that people like people who have shows on YouTube and things like that is because they don't get to be fake, right? They have to be real, and they have to confront the things that they say. So when you go on an interview on the Joe Rogan show, right, Rogan is going to ask you what he wants to ask you. It's not like when you go onto Fox News or something like that, and you essentially have a you know what you're going to be asked, you know what's off limits, and you know you could just filibuster for a couple minutes if you don't want to talk about something, and the host is going to drop it. You know, Joe is going to ask, and he's going to ask follow-ups, and everybody in this space does that. And so Dan Bongino was going to have some real accounting. So Dan Bongino gets out of the was crazy and disgusting. Now, I was like, wow, this is concerning to me. Like, Dave, I really like him. You know, we talk pretty friendly, and I know the guy really loves his family. And here we have maybe the most authoritarian administration we've ever had in the Trump administration. And while with the Trump administration, American history, and while Dan Bongino may not be a current member of that administration, a lot of people interpret him returning to the podcasting realm as basically being on assignment from the president. Like, hey, we're getting really bad press within this group. It's not going well for us within this cohort. So we need to get you back in there to convince all these people that, hey, we're actually doing a really great job. So that's what Dan Bongino has going on. And Dave, rather than being intimidated at all, absolutely comes out swinging. So I'm going to play this recent clip from Part of the Problem.
It's not that Dan Bongino sat there and then and said, you know, we're going to get to the bottom of Russiagate. We're going to get to the bottom of Epstein. We're going to get to the bottom of election fraud. We're going to get to the bottom of all this stuff, and then didn't do anything. Like, that would be one thing. That would be like you failed. But that's not what he did. He actively covered up the Epstein case. So he didn't fail. He exposed himself as the deep state. And he particularly, like, he disgusted a lot of people in his own base who are like, yo, what? I mean, like, look, even it even writes itself. It's like, dude, oh, you got, where was all this heat for the
So absolutely brilliant on Dave's part. I mean, he absolutely blasts Bongino and makes him look like an absolute clown. And kudos for Dave for being absolutely fearless and willing to say this and not in any way being intimidated by Dan Bongino and his relationship with the Trump administration. It's going to be really important to continue to hold people's feet to the fire on this Epstein issue. And I think it's a really powerful issue to confront the deep state on, because it's so transparently clear that there was a massive cover up there and a lot of really powerful people were very involved with a sex trafficker, even after they knew that he was a very sick and twisted person. All right, that will do it for the show today. Everybody, if you are still watching, please share and subscribe to the show. The best place to do that is on YouTube. We are live every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 4:40 time, 4:40 Eastern. On the next show, I will have Matt Wolfson coming back on. I really enjoyed his previous appearance on the show. I got some great audience feedback on Matt, so I think you're going to really like him. I did plan to talk to him about Zionist influence, although if the U.S. is at war with Iran, of course, we'll be talking about whatever is in the news. So be sure you're subscribed, and we'll see you again tomorrow.
Football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown in the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.